All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host, Aaron Freeman, and today I'm giving you my rapid reaction to the Falcons' 53-32 loss to the Houston Texans in Week 5.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So, guys, you know me. I'm Aaron Freeman. Been covering the Falcons for many years. I'm on Twitter at FalFans, of course, the host of this world-renowned, illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Today is the rapid reaction where I will give you my thoughts on Sunday's Week 5 game between the Falcons and Texans, only a few hours after the game has culminated. So we will get into that today, talk quite a bit about some of the defensive struggles. We'll talk a little bit about the offensive struggles, how the Falcons can get their season back on track. It seems like a regular thing that we discuss on these rapid reactions. They're getting pretty redundant at this point, but got some differing insights and some interesting stats that I'm going to throw at you guys a little bit later on in the episode. But without further ado, let's get into our Locked On Falcons lead story. After a disappointing 1-3 start, the Falcons hope to get their season back on track with a road win against the Houston Texans entering Week 5. The Falcons finally got off to a much sought-after fast start, scoring first for only the second time this season. Their previous outing in which they scored first was their win over the Philadelphia Eagles in Week 2. And considering that the 14-yard touchdown pass to Mohamed Sanu on the Falcons' second possession on Sunday marked only their second first-quarter touchdown of the year, also suggesting that Sunday was going to be a different and much more promising day for this Falcons team. However, that wouldn't hold true. Sanu's touchdown came right after Falcons forced the Texans to punt on their opening possession, and that would mark the last time the Falcons would get a true defensive stop all game long. After Sanu scored, the Texans responded with an 11-play, 75-yard touchdown drive to tie the game, capped off by a 6-yard score from Texans wide receiver Will Fuller. It would mark a career day for Fuller, who blew the doors off previous career highs of 8 catches, 125 yards, and 2 touchdowns, with a career day of 14 catches, 217 yards, and 3 scores against this Falcon defense on Sunday. Fuller's scores came on plays of 6, 33, and 44 yards. Fuller was on the receiving end of 4 of the Texans' 10 20-plus yard plays, and those big plays helped the Texans put up 592 total yards on the Falcons, the most the team has given up to any opponent since 2002, when the Pittsburgh Steelers managed 645 yards in an overtime tie. The last time the Falcons' defense allowed 7 or more touchdowns came in a 56-10 blowout in 2004 at the hands of the Kansas City Chiefs. The Falcons' defense managed to seemingly keep the Texans' offense in check for much of the first half, holding a 17-16 halftime lead at the break. Yet the Texans scored quickly to start the second half, thanks in part to a 51-yard catch from wide receiver Kiki Kuti to help set up a 1-yard touchdown run by running back Carlos Hyde. The Falcons' offense subsequently went into a shell, generating just 22 yards on their next 3 series combined to close out the third quarter. In the meantime, the Texans had pushed their lead to 2 scores up 33-17. However, at that point, the Falcons did get a break thanks to a muff punt by Texans returner DeAndre Carter, setting them up at Houston's 16-yard line. But it was a struggle for the offense to punch the ball in as they needed a 4th-and-2 conversion from Mohamed Sanu and 3 tries from the 1-yard line before ultimately Matt Ryan was able to sneak it in on 3rd down. That score cut the Texans' lead to 8 points with roughly 11 and a half minutes left in the game. But the Falcons' defense could not hold as the Texans were able to march down the field 81 yards on 9 plays with Deshaun Watson hitting tight end Darren Fells for his 2nd touchdown of the game on a 12-yard pass over overmatched Falcons safety Kamal Ishmael. The only bright spot for the Falcons in the second half came on the following series, where Calvin Ridley made a spectacular toe-tapping catch on a 29-yard pass from Matt Ryan to score with little more than 3 minutes to go in the game to cut the lead back to 1 score. But of course, Fuller would be at it again, beating Desmond Trufant on a double move for a 44-yard score. And to add insult to injury, Matt Ryan was picked off by Texans safety Tashaun Gibson, who returned that interception 79 yards for a touchdown to end and seal the 53-32 victory. The Falcons 2019 record now stands at 1-4, which was the same record they held at the same point in 2018. The Falcons were able to rattle off three straight wins a year ago to get back to 500 by week 9, and the team is hoping to repeat that again this season. Those hopes start next week when they travel to face the Arizona Cardinals, who are coming off their first win of the season in week 5 against the Cincinnati Bengals, with the Cardinals' record now sitting at 1-3-1. So there's your lead story, guys, and we'll get into the defense and why the Falcons' defense got gashed so much on today's episode coming up in just a bit. And you guys know that the Falcons are looking to change the game with a win next week, but the folks at Roman, a men's health company, have already changed the game with their Roman Swipes, which is the secret to longer-lasting sex. Roman Swipes are a clinically proven way to last longer in bed. They're not just effective, but they're easy to use, fast-acting, and don't require a prescription. Roman ships to your door in a discreet package, and each Swipes packet is small enough to put in your wallet for whenever you need it. They're super easy to use. Just take it out the package, swipe it on, let it dry, and you're ready to go. And the Swipes won't transfer to your partner, so you can last longer without worrying. You can get $10 off your first order of Swipes and free 2-day shipping at GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL. That's GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL for $10 off and free 2-day shipping. Again, go to GetRoman.com/LockedOnNFL to get $10 off your first order and free 2-day shipping. So as I mentioned at the top, the Falcons only really got one defensive stop. Technically, they got another one at the end of the first half when the Texans were just kind of twiddling their thumbs, trying to move the ball before halftime, but not really with a lot of time to do so. But basically, that opening possession was really the only stop, and basically Houston was able to score on every other drive after that point. You know, one of the things we talked about going into this game was sort of slowing down the Texans supporting cast. In a lot of ways, their offense is very similar to the Falcons, in which, you know, DeAndre Hopkins is this all-world wide receiver, and it's really about the supporting cast getting theirs. You know, Hopkins going to get his. He went, you know, 7 catches for 88 yards, typical DeAndre Hopkins game, but you got to stop the sort of peripheral guys, because if you can't stop those guys, you know, you're going to have a rough day. And the Falcons clearly didn't do that with Will Fuller, you know, going for 217 yards and 3 touchdowns. I told people throughout the summer and then earlier the season, the Fuller's the guy that really scared me, and certainly he proved those fears to be valid today. We talked about some of the issues the Falcons would have matching up, but you also got big plays from Kiki Kuti. Darren Fells was a factor in the red zone. Carlos Hyde was very effective running the football. Duke Johnson was also effective on the ground, and of course, Deshaun Watson, you know, was able to, you know, not only hurt the Falcons with his arm being extremely efficient, but also was, you know, effective, you know, scrambling and running around and extending drives as well with some big plays on the ground as well. You know, I looked at it, and one of the issues I think the Falcons had was they couldn't get stops on first down. The Texans were pretty vanilla in their sort of play calling. You know, I'll have to check the tape to see if they were doing anything particularly exotic with their running game, but it didn't seem like it watching it live. And they ran it on 23 out of their 32 first downs in this game. Their rushing success rate on those 23 runs was 50%, which for those of you that don't know, that's very good, you know, rushing success rate, particularly on first down. Their passing success rate on the 8 times they threw it was 100%. You know, Watson had a perfect passer rating on those 8 throws, 158.3, completing all 8 of those attempts for 151 yards and 2 touchdowns just on first down. And of course, on the 9th pass play that they did call, Watson scrambled for a 30-yard gain. So that, I think, was a major contributing factor to why the Falcons pass rush wasn't able to get going, because the Texans weren't really in any 3rd and longs where the Falcons defense could really pin their ears back and get after the quarterback in advantageous ways where they could take advantage of this poor Texans offensive line. Now, they still should have gotten a lot more pressure than they did. But when you look at it, you know, the 13 times the Texans had faced third down, they were in a 3rd and 8 or longer, only 3 of them. They faced 3rd and 4 or less on 8 different third downs. 3rd and 4 is about that break-even point, generally speaking, where you can reasonably expect any team with an above-average to good quarterback is going to convert 50% or more percent of the time. And, you know, of course, the Texans were facing that 8 out of 13 times. So it's not a surprise. I think they wound up converting 10 out of 13 third downs in this game. So you didn't really see a lot of pressure from the Falcons outside of Grady Jarrett getting, you know, being able to penetrate. You know, Tack was quiet. Vic was quiet. Claiborne had maybe like one time I recall seeing him do much. Bailey had maybe had like one time and he got called for a roughing the passer as well, which wiped out a solid play for the Falcons defense. You know, some of that may be owed to the fact that the Falcons, rather than playing cover one man and having Deion Jones spy Deshaun Watson, probably because they wanted Deion Jones to cover Duke Johnson out of the backfield, it seemed like the Falcons were rushing three a couple of times and having Vic sort of spy Deshaun Watson. I only noticed that a couple of times, but it certainly didn't help the pass rush in that regard. I'll have to go back and watch the tape to see if that was something that they did more than a couple of times in this game. You know, we talked about this defense having a tough time matching up with this Texans offense. You know, they couldn't man up the Texans. That was proven to be the case. You know, their zone was gashed throughout the game. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they couldn't win with just four guys up front. And, you know, you had too many blown assignments on the back end. It just basically was a cluster fudge, as they say on defense. You know, what makes it so problematic, I think, is how much they got dominated on those early downs. And again, you know, one of the things I want to check to see if the Texans really did anything exotic in that regard. You know, I know the Falcons defense is going to take a big hit on their DVOA rankings this week. I know through the first four games, I think they ranked 16th. And that's about where I thought they would be this season. If you listen to many of my Q&As, I think I was talking about sort of a realistic ceiling for them somewhere in the 14 to 18 range. I think we were like, at times we talked a little bit more hyper-optimistic that maybe if everything comes together for this defense, they might be in that 8 to 12 range, particularly if their offense can get them in advantageous situations. Clearly that is not the case. We'll talk about that a little bit later on the episode. And I think, you know, through 4 weeks, we kind of saw this defense about living up to expectations, which is part of the reason why I'm not sort of like, you know, Dan Quinn's the worst human being ever, because it was just like, well, you know, we kind of saw what I thought we would see. So I think a lot of that has to do with expectations. I think really the Falcons issue right now is they're not really playing with much confidence, not on either side of the ball. That was clear today with the defense. I think the offense is clearly not playing with confidence and really hasn't played with confidence throughout the season. Maybe they got a little bit more this week than they had in previous weeks, just because they did get off to a better start. And we'll sort of get more into some of those offensive issues, you know, a little bit later on the episode. But before we get there, I want to let you guys know that you should make a memory that lasts a lifetime and let Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter promo code at kickoff at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. Again, check out that Vivid Seats app. So guys, you know, I know today the offense wasn't the main issue, but I think when you look at the season as a whole, you know, I think it definitely has been. I looked at some stats today that when you look at the first five games of Matt Ryan's career, this has been the worst start for him from a statistical standpoint when you look at certain metrics like adjusted yards per attempt since the 2010 season. You know, and I think part of the issue is the Falcons are pretty vanilla on offense. And this kind of goes back to something I sort of mentioned in passing a little bit on Friday's Fan Talk episode, talking a little bit about maybe giving Ito Smith a larger bulk of the carries. And if you're going to be vanilla on offense, I do think it may make a little bit more sense to give Ito those carries, just because he might be able to do a little bit more with less than what Devontae Freeman is doing at this point. As I've said a number of times, I don't think Devontae Freeman is the issue, but clearly this offense needs a spark, and Devontae's not providing it. You know, this Cardinals defense is probably the only team where the Falcons really are going to get an advantageous run matchup, because they're not going to face a good run defense. And so next week is really kind of the last opportunity for Devontae Freeman, in my opinion, given that, you know, this defense has this running game has basically performed based entirely off of how good or bad the opposing defense is. This Cardinals game is going to be the last opportunity for, I think, this running game to really get going. So hopefully, you know, given how vanilla they've been, that will help spark the rest of the offense. But, you know, looking at sort of the contrast of the Texans having a lot of success on first downs and getting themselves into advantageous third downs and whatnot. You did not see that today from the Falcons offense. They had in the first half, their run pass balance on first downs was 7-8. So 7 runs to 8 passes. But on those 7 runs, they were not successful on any of them. They only averaged 1.0 yards per carry on those 7 runs. You look at the 8 throws that they had, they were successful on 62.5% on 5 of those, and they averaged about 8.1 yards per attempt on those throws. So clearly, they were having a lot more success throwing on first down. This should be no surprise to anybody out there that knows this is one of the reasons why Sark abandoned the run, and part of the reason why the whole, you know, hashtag physical, hashtag establish the run movement is just sort of dull at this point in time with the Falcons. It is not where their bread is going to be buttered. Then in the second half, once they sort of fell behind, their run pass balance fell to three runs to 10 passes on first downs, and they were still 0 for 3 on those 3 runs in terms of successes, and still only averaged 1 yard per carry on those 3 runs. And then you look at their 10 passing plays, they were successful on 40% of those and averaged 3.3 yards per attempt on those plays. So clearly, once they got behind, the Texans, particularly J.J. Watt, was able to pin his ears back and really made Caleb McGarry and Wes Schweitzer look bad. One of the things that I noticed live, it seemed like the Falcons continued to slide their protections to the left. It didn't make any sense to me why they were doing that in a lot of those situations, because it wasn't as if the Texans were lining up guys in the A-gap and forcing the team to have to make the adjustment to that. They were just seemingly sliding their protections to the left, in my opinion, for no reason. They should have been sliding them to the right in order to deal with J.J. Watt and company. But apparently the Falcons thought otherwise with their protection calls or whatnot. So that's something else I'm going to focus on when I watch the film this week. But, you know, it goes back to some of the issues that we've talked about. Obviously, if you've been listening to this podcast for over the last month, you know I'm not a huge fan of Dirk Cutter's play calling. I think the vanilla play calling is definitely a problem. But again, as I mentioned earlier, you're not seeing a team that's playing with confidence on either side of the ball. And I don't think you're really seeing leadership with this Falcons team, not only on the sideline with the coaching, but also not within the locker room. And I don't know what you can really expect from the guys in the locker room, particularly given when you look at the guys that sort of really drive the bus or steer the ship for the Falcons as far as leadership goes, are the offensive guys, and that's Matt Ryan, that's Julio Jones, that's Devontae Freeman, etc. And then when they're not necessarily giving a platform for success from the play calling, I don't know if they can really sort of rally the troops and just basically go out there and just do it on their own. That's, you know, one of those things that I don't necessarily know. And then you flip sides on the defense, then, you know, Grady Jarrett showing up, he's definitely shown leadership and whatnot, and he's showing up and performing at a high level. I feel like Ricardo Allen, even though he made some mistakes today, is not a guy that you can definitely blame for some of the issues there. But outside of those two guys, I don't know who else you can rely on. Again, Desmond Trufant certainly got beat on a couple of plays again today, but I'm not going to get mad at Desmond Trufant for getting beat on a double move on the cover one against Will Fuller. That's one of the things that we talked about. It's just like Will Fuller runs a sub 4.340. He's literally in the 99th percentile of human beings that have ever, you know, walked the face of the earth in terms of speed. I can't expect Desmond Trufant to be able to keep up with that guy on particularly, you know, for 4 quarters in a game and be able to hold his own against it. So I'm not really mad at Desmond Trufant for that play. I'm sure there are certainly Trufant haters out there that certainly will blame him for that. But it seemed like they were picking on Isaiah Oliver throughout the game. And we'll have to, you know, I'll see what Pro Football Focus is in terms of how many times he was targeted. But like my guess sitting here today is right now, he was probably targeted like 15 times, it seemed like. Sheffield, they went after Sheffield. They went after Casey. They went after Ishmael. You know, so like for me, Trufant and Allen are the guys that I'm sort of like, yeah, they're doing okay. It's the other guys that really need to step up. And, you know, another issue that I think the Falcons are dealing with is I don't know if they really got much from Deion Jones. I know he finished today with 11 tackles, but from what I recall watching the game live, maybe only one or two of those were really impact plays. Maybe he got a couple of stops late in the game when the Texans were obviously running the football to salt away the clock and maybe got a couple of stops there. And again, it's not to suggest that Deion Jones is the problem, but this is something I went back and talked about throughout the offseason when people would ask me sort of what I thought about the potential of the defense. And one of the things I talked about was their lack of discipline, and that wasn't necessarily in reference to the penalties. It was in each individual component of this defense doing their job. And I don't necessarily know if a guy like Deion Jones could really demand that as a leader in the locker room for the other 10 guys to do their jobs, because Deion Jones isn't necessarily a disciplined player. And so I don't want anybody to take this as me, you know, attacking Deion Jones. I think Deion Jones has been fine this season for the most part. I think he's been a little iffy the last couple of games in terms of making impact plays, but I don't know if that's necessarily his fault, just because, you know, he's the type of player that kind of needs to play when, you know, when he's doing his best football, he needs to play with a little bit of a lead. He needs to play with an offense that's putting up points, that's putting pressure on the defense and forcing teams to throw the football, which is where Deion Jones' strengths are in coverage, not against the run and whatnot. So, you know, but it is one of those things where I do wonder a little bit with the lack of leadership. You know, a lot of people are sort of asking me, what do you think the Falcons need to do in the draft, or who do they need to draft and you know, to fix this defense? And I'm like, I don't think the real issue is adding more youth on defense. I think the real issue is they need to go out there and get veteran leadership. And maybe, again, it's October. It's probably too early to talk about that. We don't know who's going to be coaching this team, let alone calling the defense, and what scheme they're going to bring to the table next year and whatnot. And that certainly is going to move the needle a lot more than anything that's happened in the first 5 weeks as far as what this team's going to do moving forward to help address some of these issues on defense. But personally, sort of in my headspace at this point in time in the calendar, I'm like looking more at guys like Terrell Suggs and Sean Lee and Danny Trevathan as the type of players that I want to add to this defense, rather than just some young, sexy, athletic defensive player in the draft that's going to basically be, you know, the same old as what we already have, and it's going to need to be taken under the wing of certain of these guys that are already here that I just don't know based off of their body of work if you really want these guys, or at least some of these guys, to sort of be the foundation of your or your defensive success from a leadership standpoint moving forward. So that's a question I have. Well, again, there's a lot of football left to be played, and I certainly in 2 or 3 weeks could be, you know, do a complete 180 as far as that goes, but we'll have to sort of see how that goes. But the sort of last point I'll make is, you know, a lot of people are talking about firing Dan Quinn, which I think is going to come with the territory. From here on out, every time the Falcons lose in a major way, people are going to wonder, is Dan Quinn going to be able to get on that plane and fly back to Atlanta, or is Dan Quinn going to be given his pink slip based off of, you know, the report from Vaughn McClure of ESPN.com? You know, he talked to Arthur Blank about Dan Quinn's job status. Arthur Blank said no. But, you know, you look at next week's game against Arizona, this is, by without a doubt, looking at record-wise, this is the most winnable game on the rest of the Falcons' schedule. And so if they do lose next week, you do wonder where their next win is going to come from this season. And so, you know, it wouldn't shock me if potentially, you know, I'm not suggesting that if they lose to Arizona that Dan Quinn is automatically going to get fired. But, you know, I think we would have to really seriously address that possibility that that move will happen mid-season, when up till now I've been sort of the mindset that there's little to no chance that that would happen, you know, during the season. That would happen maybe late in the year or at the end of the season. And, you know, part of that is just due to the fact that I don't want to necessarily see Mike Mularkey and Dirk Cutter have to take on a bigger responsibility. I don't want to see this defense have to be coordinated by, you know, Jeff Ulbrich or Bob Sutton, who I don't necessarily feel, you know, I know a lot of people are like, anything could be better than what Dan Quinn's been. I think I would question that a little bit, but we'll have to see. You know, Raheem Morris would probably be the guy, if I had to guess right now, that would take over for Dan Quinn. So that's speculation at this point in time. But, you know, clearly this team is reeling. I think they're, you know, we'll have to sort of see what the tape says, but I mean, it seems like there were some positives for the offense. You know, Calvin Ridley did have a nice game today. So that's a positive. So they did get Ridley a little bit more involved. Didn't seem like they, you know, I don't really recall them going after Lonnie Johnson like I had hoped they would do, outside of that Sanu touchdown on the second series. But you know, it seemed like they were going after Joseph and Roby quite a bit as well. So it didn't seem like their game plan was geared towards attacking what they perceive to be the weakest link in the Texans secondary. Seemingly, like, the Texans game plan seemed to be to go after what they perceived to be the weakest link, which was Isaiah Oliver, at least watching it live. So we'll come back tomorrow and talk a little bit more about this game, get some additional thoughts on this performance, and then we'll be back Wednesday to preview that Wednesday game, that back Wednesday to preview that Arizona game, I'm sorry. And then Thursday, I'll certainly do my All-22 breakdown and give you sort of my more in-depth thoughts on what the film showed me on this game. And then, you know, Friday, we'll probably have another fan talk where someone else will be ranting and understandably ranting about sort of what's going on with this team. And then we'll sort of see what happens on Sunday against the Arizona Cardinals. So long season underway. Nice to see the Falcons offense boost their points per game average after today. Got some couple of garbage time scores late to make things at least somewhat interesting. But we all knew that with how the defense was performing that there was no chance once they fell behind, you know, two scores midway through the third quarter that they had any chance of coming back and winning this game. And, you know, it's been sort of the story of the Falcons season, which is they get behind and their offense, you know, essentially the front runners. Hate to say it, but it is what it is. Until they prove us otherwise, that's what they are. So, yeah, guys, appreciate you guys tuning in. Another bummer of a week. I'm sorry I couldn't give you more positives. And, you know, for those of you that were looking for a little bit more fire and brimstone, look, it is what it is, man. Me sitting here ranting about it at this point in time, I just don't see as overly constructive at this point. They're bad. We all know they're bad. Just got to find new ways each week to explain how and why they're bad, I guess, is basically my goal for the rest of the year, to make it less boring, I guess, at this point in time. So, yeah, that's what we got in store for you the rest of the week, guys. You know, enjoy the Braves. Get behind Georgia. I know Atlanta, Georgia sports is not the most reliable entity in the history of sports, but you know, take some energy, you know, listen to the podcast, no doubt about it. I don't want you to stop getting them downloads. Listen to the podcast, you know, but you can sort of put less emotion in the Falcons moving forward, I think, is my recommendation for a healthier and happier 2019 from here on out. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.